going to get an update on the Workforce Development Council activities. Goes without saying that I think the hits are probably like about double the last few months anyway, and I know our committee visited a couple of them 2 or 3 months ago, and certainly a lot going on. And so with that, Minnesota Workforce Center's resource area study, I guess that's on our desk here, and Brenda Norman is the executive director. Why don't you come up, and then and you, that second literature here will be on the workforce and tomorrow's economy. Is that correct? So why don't you just relax, visit with us, and tell us what's going on, and proceed.
Thank you for inviting me today. And we have two reports that we want to share with you today. And the first one is on the immediate need that we are facing. And this study was conducted in over the past 7 months from June until the end of December. And the purpose of the study is to learn more about the universal customer and their experiences and outcomes of the Workforce Center resource areas. Specifically, the purpose of the study was to identify the demographics and the experiences as well as the outcomes of participating in the resource areas. So if we look on the slides, on slide number two, I'll just start with the overall mission the Governor's Workforce Development Council, which is whose role is to analyze and recommend workforce development policies to the governor and legislature toward talent development, resource alignment, and system effectiveness to ensure Minnesota's globally competitive workforce. The council is a bipartisan council with 32 members that represent business, labor.
Let me interrupt you for a second. That it's kind of who's who. The makeup of the council roster is on your desk, and I think it's interesting to see a lot of, it's about everybody, chancellors, union representation, the business community, and I think there's 32 members. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And a couple of legislators. Senator Rosen is on this, and Sandra. Well, Sandra Peterson.
Clark.
But anyway, it's Otero Clark too. But anyway, Mr. Gertesmeyer, the list goes on, and you have quite a roster here of good people working on this stuff. Okay, thank you. Maybe continue.
Thank you, Chair Metzen. As I said, that the resource area study was conducted in fulfillment of the state statute for the GWDC that requires a report to the legislature every odd-numbered year in January with recommendations for workforce center system improvement. And this study address some key questions about what are the outcomes of the universal customers who use the resource area core services. Additionally, the committee members that oversaw this, the development of this report, wanted to know who are the universal customers that are using Workforce Center resource area core services. What are the reasons they come in to the workforce centers? What tools and services are they using? What were their results of their job search activities? How did the experience in the resource areas meet with their expectations? And how could the tools, experience, and services be improved? And just for a little bit of background information, core services are the job search activities, job seeking workshops, resume development, access to computers, assistance with using office technology to contact employers, using the Minnesota Job Bank online. All of those activities are provided within an area of every workforce center. Minnesota has 47 workforce centers. Each one has a resource area that's open to anyone called the universal customer, anyone who walks in and would like assistance provided in a resource area is eligible.
Are there any voids geographically in the state that are covered with these 47? Are there any areas that stick out that you're aware of?
I don't have any information about voids in service delivery areas, but I would probably defer to maybe answering that question by Ann Olson of the Minnesota County Workforce Association is here today, so she might have another perspective on that. Several years ago, there was a study conducted by the Governor's Workforce Development Council to identify if indeed there were too many workforce service areas, and at that time it was determined that there were not. So I would offer the opportunity.
Sure, that's good. Mm-hmm.
In the data collection process, we conducted a client survey. We obtained information from the customer registration system database, information from a customer satisfaction survey. We conducted focus groups, interviews, and conducted an extensive literature review. The report itself contains a lot of specific detailed information that we found in the study, but what I'm going to provide you is a very broad oversight of our findings and critical incidents and recommendations. The findings were that in 2008, 98,634 universal customers overall were served in the 47 workforce center resource areas. Customers, these are unduplicated counts. Customers coming in using computers for job search, job application, et cetera, a resume development were 96,000. And in the customers attending job seeking workshops were over 10,000. From the data that we collected, there were critical incidents, critical issues identified relating to the clients. The client profile themselves represent a much greater increase in diversity. This includes also older workers who are coming in who have who are close to retirement but are looking for additional opportunities. They include workers who have been retired and now are finding themselves in the position of needing to come back to work. We have an increased representation in second language speakers, and we also have an increase in the numbers of people with disabilities who are seeking employment as well. They represent as well a very significant gap in their ability to use technology, and we find that the ability to come in and sign on to a computer and do an online job search or develop a resume just is not an inherent skill that this group possesses. They have a myriad of issues that they are dealing with in addition to being unemployed. Many of them have transportation issues. They have housing concerns. They might be in a mortgage crisis themselves. There are health care concerns, child care concerns as well. And that combines with the increased emphasis of the resource areas that were designed to be self-service environments for people to come in and obtain these services. And so employers are asking for applications online. They're asking for resumes to be submitted through email. Job search itself, the process is usually online. And that is really demonstrating a huge gap between the ability of the population who's coming in and the technology that they need to use. Some of the issues in terms of being able to step up to provide the service for individuals in resource areas is the fact that over the past 20 years, the employment services funding for Wagner-Peiser has been flat, and in effect, that has gone down. In 2004, 35 positions of individuals who were providing core services were repurposed from the area to provide services to businesses. They were repurposed into business service specialist positions. And right now we have an increased demand for core services that simply cannot be met. What we found is that, again, if you look on slide number 7, I'm sorry, slide number 8, the major conclusion is that the self-service model on which the Workforce Center resource areas were designed to operate, and this is by federal mandate, it's not just state operation, that they were designed to operate, doesn't meet the needs of the majority of clients who come in for job search assistance and for assistance with the unemployment insurance application. We have basically three categories of the population that would be that we're talking about. One is the unemployed category of individuals who are technology proficient. They can use their networking skills and abilities to communicate, do their job search from home. They can log in. They have the ability to do a job search from their residence or from a public access computer. A second category of individuals might be a group who just are simply not looking for work. But the group of people who come in to the resource areas really require assistance. They need the help. They need the assistance with getting through a phone tree or through the computer screens to apply for unemployment insurance. They need assistance with computer skills on how to log in, how to turn on the computer, how to word process, how to develop a resume. And so the population that comes in really needs the assistance, and we have an increased demand that we currently cannot meet.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Norman, when you say it can't be met, what does that mean? Do you have to turn them away, or is that it's just a time delay before you can get to their needs, or what exactly is that?
Chair Metzen, Senator Rosen, what we found in our discussions in the focus groups is that the staff who work with in the resource areas and provide direct service to clients are often find themselves in a position of being able to spend less than 4 or 5 minutes with any certain individual based on the high level of traffic. So we have examples of individuals saying, perhaps you can come back later in the week when there aren't so many people here. Early in the week is when people come in to file for unemployment insurance, and so there's a higher level of a demand certainly earlier in the week. So they have people either trying to fend for themselves or they are recommended to come back later in the week.
Thank you.
Analysis of our data, too, there was a significant correlation of customers, a high level of correlation between the ability to obtain assistance from staff and customer satisfaction. So that's probably not a surprising detail, but it was borne out in the statistics as well, in the statistical analysis as well. On slide 9, our recommendation is that we support the addition to and reallocation of existing state staff to meet the increased demands for core services in the resource areas. This underscores the need for more staff. Whether the staff is hired by state or local areas is not of significance to the Governor's Workforce Development Council. The criticality is simply for more staff to be available to meet this need. And I believe in looking at the federal stimulus dollars that could be coming to Minnesota, my understanding is that those dollars are designated for specific program uses and perhaps will not address this need for the universal customer.
It will not?
That's my understanding.
So what would be, how many more important areas than this are there? You would think training and workforce development for people that are hurting, that don't have a job, would be climb right to the top, but what I know.
Chair Manson, my understanding is that the money would go to dislocated worker programs, unemployment insurance, et cetera, which is program specific. And again, the
portability to get to this, as far as you know.
My understanding at this time is that it is not.
But there's more than state staff, right? Slide number 9.
Actually, the local areas stepped up to meet the need of filling the gap. And of those, when in 2004, when 35 staff were taken out to be redesigned into the business service specialist positions, the local areas made up that difference by hiring staff. There's also a significant number of partnerships that that provide staffing, but it is often cobbled together for resource area coverage. Sometimes you have partners from different programs assigned 2-3 hours a week even, and so they're patchworking together the coverage. And on slide number 10, again, the unemployment insurance assistance, we support adding temporary staff to help meet the need for assistance in filing unemployment insurance. One quote that is very, that resonates with me from one of the resource area staff said, I used to spend about 25% of my time helping people file for unemployment insurance. Now it's about 90% of my time. And I think that is a very significant statistic.
They increased the hours in this area too, the UI, where people can apply. Did I read that or hear that somewhere?
The call center.
I believe the, yes. Chair Manson, I believe it's the call center.
Call center. Okay, that's where it's okay. Yeah.
Correct. Slide 11 just talks about that the remaining recommendations in the report that you'll find are specific actions that can be accomplished at the agency level, and they have suggest increased accountability and can be implemented by local-level service delivery strategy, so I don't need to take you through all of those individual ones. The most significant one really is the critical need for additional staffing.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman. Increased accountability in regards to what?
Chair Metzen, Senator Tomasoni, the accountability that the GWDC is recommending is that There should be a little bit more return on investment measurement beyond the federal program measures. At this time, the reports that come out at the state level only reflect meeting federal program goals, and the GWDC feels that there should be a little bit higher level of measurement of effectiveness and return on investment for the overall state alignment and strategy in workforce development.
So, in other words, Mr. Chairman, the people at the workforce centers should be getting the people who are applying more jobs, or what are we talking about here exactly?
Program effective measurement at the state level in terms of how funds are distributed, how they are measured for effectiveness at the state level.
Yeah, but I'm trying to find out what that means. Does that mean that the people that work at the workforce center are more successful at getting people jobs, or what does that mean exactly?
That is
at the state level.
There's a tremendous amount of discretion in the workforce development for program delivery, and that is not always measured in terms of beyond program measurement. Beyond program performance levels, there's no effectiveness measurement of the overall department in workforce development.
Can you tell me what that means, though? I mean, I hear that people walk in and they can't use computers. Okay, so now I'm assuming that the job of the people that are working there is to try and help these people get through the computer program so that they can find a job that might be available. Is the effectiveness that you're measuring, is it that this person that's working there is helping this person use the computer, and whether or not he's effective at using the person to use the computer, or are they effective at finding a job for the person? What are we trying to be effective at here?
According to slide number 5, somebody's helping somebody, because you've got 96,000 are using the computers and 98,000 showed up, right?
So, I mean, do you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
I mean, I just kind of want to example of what this effectiveness is.
Chair Metzen, Senator Tomasoni, this recommendation came from Governor's Workforce Development Council members, and it was outlined a little more fully on page 19 of the Workforce Area Study Report, and it indicates that the workforce program accomplishments are reported according to federal measures and guidelines. However, efficiency and the effectiveness of the delivery of services are not measured or reported. The measures should be designed and applied to the workforce programs and to the respective advisory board. In terms of looking at the practices of the business service specialists in terms of the ability to move staff from one function to another, we feel those kinds of activities should be measured for effectiveness.
And, Mr. Chairman,
Chairman,
just out of curiosity, slide number 9, we need more staff, or we need reallocation of staff, or we need both, according to that particular slide. I'm trying to figure out how to put this into the current budget crisis. And how, I mean, I'm all for hiring more staff, but do we have a recommendation on how to do that?
Chair Metzen, Senator Tomasoni, one of the recommendations was to reallocate time and hours of the business services staff back into resource areas so that their time could be reassigned into the resource areas, depending on how much of that function could be assigned back to the resource areas. We also recommend that the local levels be provided additional resources to meet their local needs.
That if you put those people in it, reapply them in another area, that's only 35 people, isn't it? So that's less than one helper at these 47 sites. You'd think you'd need more of that, Senator Tomasoni, than the, if you reallocated to 35 and were shifted over. It didn't seem to help you much, but it would, you know, would help you somewhat. But
Senator Metzen, yes. These are designed to be broad, overarching policy recommendations. The specifics, I believe, in terms of the numbers of staffing that are needed, really should be left to the service delivery providers and the program directors. And so, I would recommend the Workforce Council Association and the state program staff would be good resources to determine exactly how many staff would be needed.
Senator Salzman.
Yes. Just follow up, perhaps, Mr. Chair. We visited a workforce center in
West St. Paul.
In West St. Paul. And one of the questions we asked was, you know, the people who are there, do we have any track record of how many are finding jobs? And it is very difficult because, you know, people will follow so many leads. So when I look at this and I hear our employment figures, more people are out of work, but there are less jobs to be filled. Is putting more money in a resource center to help more people find jobs that aren't there the best place to put staff, or is it more in, you know, training or building the economy so we have more jobs? And that's what I'm sort of struggling with here, is that we're going to have more people at these centers, but if the jobs aren't there for them to find, is having more staff necessarily going to solve the problem? So I guess that's sort of my question in all of this. It's allocation of resources, but not just within this division, but what we're doing in terms of training. If people aren't trained in the right areas, I guess that's sort of where I'm sort of questioning reallocating staff, is how are we going to find jobs for people when we don't have the jobs? That's the dilemma.
Has the council looked at this thing, like Senator Salzman's talking about, like more globally than just – getting them here to help them out to find jobs that probably aren't there?
Chair Metzen, Senator Salzman, I believe that what we're dealing with is the fact that individuals who are dislocated workers and are eligible for dislocated worker programs will receive the education, training, retraining that they might need. And so they qualify for services under a specific program.
Okay, that helps me a little bit, yeah. Okay, continue on there.
He just kind of floats, you know.
Slide number 12 talks about our 2008 policy advisory, which was a large project and product of the council over the past year and a half, and it takes a little bit longer term perspective beyond the current unemployment crisis that we have now. We know that when the economy goes back in the other direction, that we are indeed going to be facing a critical workforce shortage. And the recommendations that are found in the policy advisory, and if you recall, we did mail this policy advisory to all the members of this committee, and so just to refresh your memory. And the critical needs that this policy advisory address in the longer term is that Minnesota employers will need skilled workers to prosper. And we also are facing, as you know, from the demographic information that you've heard from our Labor Market Information Office and Steve Hine, is that certainly as Minnesota's workers retire, our workforce development system needs to find ways to replace skilled employees. And the committees in our policy advisory were education, a skill and wage advancement committee that looks at advancing education career pathways for low-wage workers, a business and community connections committee, and a diversity committee. Slide number 14 refers to a recommendation for high school students that says no later than ninth grade they should have a plan for education and career that helps them move beyond high school into competitive employment and post-secondary education. We believe that everyone should be prepared when they leave high school to compete both at the post-secondary level, and they should be prepared to work, and they should know how to get from the high school level into their next phase of life. And a plan would be very helpful for students to consider examining career options, examining what kind of education is needed to achieve certain careers, and to have a goal in mind by the time they graduate from high school. The information suggests that over the next few years that it would be about $1 million to $1.5 million to for every school district to put a plan like this in place, and it should become part of the graduating class of a requirement by 2014.
So question that, Mr. Chair.
Senator Saltzman.
Yes. I wonder if you could share if there are other states that are doing this, because I do remember the governor had a proposal maybe two years ago, something like this with a graduation plan, and I'm not sure it was related specifically to employment, but sort of really looking at what kind of coursework a student is taking. Do you know of other states that are doing this? One of the concerns that we had as an education committee was that this requires counselors to be involved, and we probably rank almost last in the nation in terms of funding for counselors. So do you have some other information on other states? What sort of information would be included in these plans?
Chair Manson, Senator Saltzman, I would like to invite my colleague from staff who actually staffed this committee and has more background detail up to the table to respond to your question.
Thank you.
Hi there. I'm a policy analyst for the GWDC. Ryan Lindsley, Senator Metzen, Senator Tom Saltzman. Other states, I don't believe that there's a specific requirement that's been passed through the legislature at other states, but I know that different school districts within Minnesota are enacting these kind of graduation requirements, like the St. Paul School District and the Minneapolis School District. And others across the state are also starting to do this. This would kind of be a way to expand that to more districts and then make it a requirement so that it was required to happen.
No, I don't. Okay. Continue on.
Thank you. The next recommendation is from the Skill and Wage Advancement Committee. And the recommendation most prominently from the Skill and Wage Advancement Committee was to update Minnesota's financial aid policies to better support adult and non-traditional learners. What we found is that the current rules in applying for financial aid disadvantage individuals with full-time jobs and parenting responsibilities. These financial aid policies were crafted for recent high school graduates originally, and financial aid programs carry rules that restrict eligibility among non-traditional students. So it really creates a burden for anyone who is employed and has a family and wants to attend post-secondary training or education while they're employed and not a full-time student to participate with any financial assistance at all unless they're taking out their own loans.
Do you have a plan for that or just it's a wish list or what?
We actually do have some specific recommendations. Our full report is online, and we have made specific recommendations to the Office of Higher Education.
There's
stamps.
I can comment on a few things. I know a lot of times full-time working adults who are trying to go back to school but maybe in a low-wage job may have a higher income because they have more expenses. Childcare expenses could be one, and so they wouldn't qualify for financial aid under the current policy, which is designed towards younger, you know, more recent graduates. And one other one is that a lot of financial aid is designed to support full-time students, and working adults often can only be part-time students, so that restricts the amount of financial aid they'd have access to.
Well, we're always looking for help on how to implement some of these things, you know. So if you have ideas on how to pick up some of these people, we'd like to know what they are. Continue on.
Thank you. The Business and Community Connections recommendation suggests that to review and adjust cost reimbursement formulas at the post-secondary institutions to address disparities between the occupation-specific and the liberal arts courses in credit and non-credit programs. And the interpretation on that is the fact that a nursing degree costs a lot more than a liberal arts degree in history or English. Likewise, an engineering degree costs more simply because of the technology and the lab and the clinicals and the experience with the technology, the equipment, and the processes that need to be taught. And currently, the post-secondary institutions are reimbursed at the same rate whether they offer a technology-based course or whether it is a history course. And we feel that because of the occupations in demand, that the post-secondary institutions should be reimbursed at a higher rate for the courses that employers need and jobs and post-secondary participants need to compete in the economy. Slide number 18 is the Diversity Action Committee. Recommendation is to expand the opportunity for workplace experience with internships, mentorships, job shadowing, et cetera, to build work exposure and experiences into a job seeker portfolio. And when we talk about diversity, we're talking about a range of members of populations far beyond racial and ethnic diversity. We're talking about ex-offenders. We're talking about youth. We're talking about immigrants. We're talking about people with disabilities, all of the individuals of society that have been marginalized to some degree. And at this point, moving forward, again, after the economic crisis is passed, is that we need to have everyone in the workplace. Everyone counts. And so we would really like to see a tremendous increase in the actual exposure to job experiences so that, A, we have a workforce that's moving into the ability to be hired with the understanding of work ethic, work practices, and the related skills and abilities. And also, it's a fabulous way for employers to develop relationships and get to know an individual's skills and abilities before they get hired.
Mr. Chair.
So with this huge task in front of you, you're going to need more than that flexibility of personnel, aren't you? Aren't you going to need more, like Senator Thomas, what he was hitting on, more dollars to have these people out there? Are you, Commissioner, recommending more money or to do the job right, or the governor, or do you know?
At this time, I do not have any information that there is that it's in the governor's budget at this time.
Can we guess? Oh. All right. We can't make. This is very important stuff, and people are hurting out there.
Mr. Chair.
And this is probably not the time to be. Hopefully, if we don't get any more money, hopefully he's not at least cutting any more in this area. Senator Rosen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Norman, on your slide 18, with the internships and mentorships and the job shadowing, was there any information? Was the GWCDC, were they tracking the trend in that before the economic crisis? But where employers were going, and where did you see some of the internships showing up, and was it getting more popular? I'm just trying to find out if this is something that will explode after our economic crisis is over, if it's something. I think it's a great idea, actually, to have the internships, but I was just wondering what area you saw this emphasis in, and if you were tracking it at all.
Chair Manson, Senator Rosen, the committee studied, this really ties in a lot to education, the education committee as well. And there are a number of program-specific activities, again. And what we find in Minnesota, and we've been jokingly called the land of 10,000 pilots, in that there are a tremendous amount of programs that have specific funding for a specific activity. And what happens is that the program is implemented, there's a great success rate, and that there isn't necessarily a tremendous amount of continuity or infrastructure to sustain a best practice like that after the program and funding is over. And so what we'd like to see is that becomes part of our statewide infrastructure for preparing people for work.
Well, Mr. Chair, Ms. Norm, did you see a specific area that where these pilots or these programs or internships were directed? Was it in the bioscience industry? Was it more in the medical industry, manufacturing, anything?
Yeah, I can say that I wasn't on this committee, but I know they did study programs that took place at Best Buy and then also Medtronic, and then also a few programs that were, I think, at a few government departments that were implementing different internship or mentoring programs. And I think what they found in the end was that the return on investment was very high. So employers who did these programs found that they had a great success at recruiting participants of those programs, and they could do it in a very low-cost way.
Mm. That's good to know.
Good. Excuse me, I have one more addition. There are high school manufacturing camps that have been extremely successful, as well as the robotics, and that is part of the STEM, the science, technology, engineering, and math curriculum, and the bots, battle bots, is a competitive arena where students actually build and program their own robots for competition, and that has been part of the manufacturing arena for quite some time. Extremely successful.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair.
Senator Scoy, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Ms. Norman, not even so much that you need to respond to this, but just kind of a few comments that I'd like to make about some of the recommendations. You know, when we were struggling in the Education Policy Committee with the standards a few years ago, there was a fair amount of discussion with regard to this education recommendation about the workforce planning, and it got to be quite controversial. But one of the things that we did talk about was that really by the time the student has reached the ninth grade, it's probably a little late. And if you are going to be encouraging more development, more in their education, you need to start earlier than the ninth grade. But it was very controversial. With regard to this financial assistance, you know, the state grant is an income-based program, and it's as you pointed out, it's hard to get people that are working part-time to qualify for that. The stuff that I've been looking at with regard to this is you're going to need to increase base funding to the institutions in order to achieve these goals, because that's the way you can have part-time students, is by keeping their tuition costs low to begin with. And then the third one, with regard to the changing the reimbursement for the differing classes that the higher ed institutions offer, you know, we've had a fair amount of discussion in my short time here about what we do here. And, you know, one of the things that occurs to me is that, you know, most of the people that are in the workforce now, I think they change jobs about 9 or 11 times or something like that during their work career. And so just having this specific training might not be serving them as well as a very broad-based education where they learn creative thinking and how to read and understand their new job as well as the job that they're coming out of college with. So, you know, it's interesting stuff to think about, and, you know, maybe when you guys get together again, you'd want to kind of roll some of that stuff around in your discussion, because I think it is, a little different perspective on the issue that needs to be brought into the discussion.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, any further questions? We'll go on to Senator Tomasoni.
Well, to that point and to the recommendations of the council, it shows you what a interesting situation we're in right now, because virtually everything you're recommending is based on increasing funding, and we're going to be getting all kinds of recommendations for cutting funding in all areas of our government here, and so it's this is going to be a very, very difficult situation for us. And this particular recommendation is about putting people to work, which is what we need to do. But I'd be very surprised if we get a recommendation from the governor to increase our spending in this area, unless, of course, he's taking the money from the Workforce Development Fund. But I think he hit that for $8 million last year. And
how much?
$8 million, is that correct?
Cut less. Excuse me, let's get a clarification on that. Ask that question again. So,
is that correct, that the Workforce Development Fund was $8 million was taken out of the fund for balancing the budget, I believe.
And then
I think the commissioner has the ability to raise the rate from it's 0.1 right now to 0.12, which would also increase the amount of money available in the Workforce Development Fund, but that can only be done in December, if I'm not mistaken. And so maybe we need to change his ability to do that kind of stuff in a more timely manner for this particular economy. And thirdly, to Senator Scoy's point about the ninth graders, our entire educational system has been taking vocational job training out of the high school just because of the fact that it's, as you mentioned, one of the most expensive areas to train people. It's probably one of the most cost-beneficial thing that we could possibly have in our schools, and yet we're not doing it like we used to. And I know Virginia, for example, used to have Virginia High School used to have 12 industrial arts teachers, and now they have one. And it's an indication of where K-12 education is spending their resources, and it's all about passing tests, and it's not about getting kids to into the workforce, I think. So I think we have a lot of work, and it's just a general comment I have to make, but I'm not sure how. And I will be willing to bet that we get a lot of other people coming into various committees saying we need more money in order to get things done, and yet we're going to be cutting. So it'll be an interesting legislative session here.
Senator Saltzman.
Well, on that same point, I think within the Education Committee, we have been talking about how we have taken a change in terms of how we educate our students, and we talk a lot about rigor. And rigor is raising the bar, and AP classes and IB programs, which are great, but if we don't engage students. And we're also finding that a number of students who are highly skilled and motivated, that they learn differently. And so those vocational technical programs, those students can just soar if we have the right kind of setting. So I think there's an opportunity, Mr. Chair, for education and our business committees to sort of look at this area and look at the resources that we have. And sometimes it is an allocation process, although school districts are really struggling. But, you know, how can we develop partnerships? And is it internships? We talked here about having a four-year plan for high school students. Is there an opportunity to require community service or an internship or something? Because having both my children just, you know, complete high school, it's really a lot of classroom sitting, and we've got to change. And that's a challenge at a time when we don't have resources, but it's also an opportunity to look at how we could do some things differently and really engage our young people. So I know there are some people on this committee who sit on both of education, higher ed, and also business economic development. We've got to all work together on this issue so we're not in silos as we develop our policies.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, Senator Salzman, are looking to a couple of committees, including this one, to kind of help with that roadmap. So we've got a lot of work to do here, and more bang for our buck, and we'll be a little more creative. And we don't sit here and pretend to have all the answers today, but maybe we can figure out some positive things in the next couple of months with the help of these members on this committee. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that comment, to Senator Tomasoni's comment about industrial arts teachers, I live in a county that's the number one ag county in the state, the largest pork producer. It produces more hogs in that state. It's the third largest county in the nation on hog producing. The soil is as dark as can be, corn and soybeans. It's beautiful. We don't have an ag curriculum at any of the high schools. County, that's pretty bad. So we used to mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we need to look at it broadly too, not mm-hmm. just the sciences. I mean, it's a whole workforce development, especially when we're looking at the biosciences. I have two questions. One is, and I should know this since I'm on the council, but I don't. What is the relationship right now with like the Bio Alliance and the bioscience organizations? What is the Governor's Workforce Development Council doing with a relationship in that area?
Chair Metzen and Senator Rosen, we are not participants on those councils. We communicate through the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, who have representatives on those councils, and they bring information back. We do not have a direct contact with the councils at this time.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, my other question, that maybe is something that we might want to look at, because they really are ramping up as far as direction and need and push. And I know there is something this Wednesday, isn't it? Or is it this Wednesday, yeah. Senator Salzman? My other question is on the second recommendations in the resource area study. It talks about the addition of temporary staff in the workforce development or workforce centers. What do you mean by temporary?
We do understand that hopefully this unemployment insurance or the unemployment situation will abate at some point.
Oh, okay.
We put that in because we are not in favor of simply arbitrarily adding state staff, but to add staff temporarily to certainly meet this current demand at its peak level.
Thank you.
Okay. That's good stuff. Ms. Norman, number two here, preparing Minnesota, we kind of overlapped the past hour or so on tomorrow's economy and recommendation systems improvements, or is that this whole thing here?
No, sir, Chair. We did cover this as well.
Okay. Okay, well, there's a lot of, what else? We, Senator Carlson?
Mr. Chair and Ms. Norman, I'm trying to think if there's an answer buried in here somewhere. There's a lot of recommendations, and the recommendations appear to all involve money. And we don't have a bottom line. But also up further is on slide number 12, critical needs. Minnesota employers need skilled workers to prosper in the global economy and as workers retire. You know, same thing we've heard quite a bit. Does the council, have they identified any specifics here? And also, I guess what I'm wondering is that the council has a lot of industry people on it, maybe not quite as many as I would have hoped, but what is the, like, the manufacturing and the business people's answer to number one? What are they willing to do, or what do they feel that business should do to solve their problem?
Chair Metzen and Senator Carlson, in answer to your question about the council and its information, as an executive committee, we met last week on Friday to formulate a strategy to actually develop a report to look at 5 years and 10 years out, what are the emerging industries, occupations, and jobs and skills that will be needed by the workforce of the future. In terms of what the businesses themselves are willing to do, I do not have information other than becoming more engaged in the schools, partnering, lending their industry expertise in terms of curriculum development, advisory boards, et cetera, providing the opportunity and place in their workplace for the internships, opportunities, and mentorships that we've talked about before. Those are the kinds of things that we have been able to count on business for in the past.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Carlson,
and Ms. Norman, when you said that the businesses are coming up, you know, you mentioned robotics, and I'm involved in that, and I am experienced with a lot of companies that are supporting the programs, but it's largely on a voluntary basis. Is there something that can be done? You know, and I guess this is probably more or less a visionary question, but when we look at these types of jobs in the future that we're going to be needing, something that we can relate some kind of an incentive for businesses to now get involved, like robotics, for instance. The robotics is a very futuristic building block program in high schools. It deals with the state-of-the-art controls and state-of-the-art, and it's bringing it right to high schools. Something like that, I think, is the benefits of it are terrific. And if there's a way to bring that in other particular areas, like when Senator Rosen mentioned agriculture, I know everywhere there used to be a lot of involvement in agriculture in high schools with the, you know, the future farmers and that sort of thing. And if there's some way to relate that back to the schools, because that's where we really need to push it as early as possible. If there's something that you can come up with there, make a recommendation, I think that would really be helpful.
Okay. You.
I'm not sure how to get there, but I've been hearing from particularly, well, Senator Rosen and Saltzman about this additional communications, if you will, or more collaboration and what's the right hand doing, what's the left hand doing, and how, I don't have the answers this afternoon, but how to pull these things together. But we might create some kind of a working group led by two of my friends to the left, Senator Saltzman and Rosen, maybe to look at you know, if there's duplication, triplication, and some of the jobs training areas that the bioscience, whatever. I guess I'm not sure where I'm going with this, except that I'll know where I'm going probably tomorrow sometime. but we should, that makes some kind of sense that we got to start pulling things together and connecting the dots a little bit better than I think we've probably been doing. I'm mumbling a little bit, but we got to get there, right? All right. Are we, any Senator Saltzman?
Just another comment, Mr. Chair. We discussed earlier that on this Wednesday, the BioBusiness Alliance is going to be having their 2025 destination unveiling, which really talks about a plan, as we've talked about here. And part of that is the workforce development. And I know that the members of this committee were invited to attend. I know all of you also have been invited to attend the early childhood presentation, which is a real dilemma. I plan to attend the BioBusiness Alliance, and if you haven't RSVP'd yet, I would encourage you to do that. And it is an invitation-only event because of space issues. But I think it's a very good starting point, you know, for this committee to hear about the work that they've been doing. And we just encourage you, if you had not had time to RSVP yet, there still is time before Wednesday. And it's at the History Center.
5 o'clock, sir.
I think it's 4 o'clock. There's a registration. I think program is from 4:30 to 6. It's a bipartisan event. There'll be academics there, legislators, business folks, really pulling together the three sectors that we've talked about are really important to grow jobs in Minnesota, particularly in, you know, the bioscience area, and which is very broad, a very broad area. So.
Okay. Senator Day.
I got a comment as I'm sitting here listening to all this. You know, at one time we had vocational schools, then we had the community schools, and we merged them together. I can remember Senator Moe and all of us were very nervous about, will we lose the vocational skills and we'll totally turn it over to the academic. Slowly that's happened, so I think the company's just got to get back in the groove and say, okay, we're going to take on and start training our own welders and partnering how to do this. I am probably one of the only people in the entire room here that feel our schools are totally inadequate to do most everything. I mean, I won't even get into that, but, you know, 70% of the kids that go to Metropolitan College have to get remedial training. It's 30% to go to a four-year college, MinSCU. We just pay for them here, and we pay for them here. Fortunately, I'm not on education committee. Otherwise, you guys would all throw me underneath the bus immediately. But I am not too enamored with that system. I think the workforce thing. I guess I get back to Senator Saltzman. Do you need to expand the system when there aren't any jobs? I mean, I don't know exactly what they're all doing in my hometown of Owatonna right now. I mean, it's kind of like a, you know, an unemployment office can fill out the things, but if they don't have any jobs for anybody that's there. So, I don't know how this all breaks out. So I wished I had some better answers. When I look at 9th grade kids will know what they're going to be. I mean, I got 4 kids, in fact, including myself. It took us 35 years to figure out what we wanted to do. I don't know if I could have took any of my kids and said, and you know, in 9th grade. Now, 40 years ago, you know what? A lot of us worked for companies for 30 years. That was the way things were. The companies were loyal. The employees were loyal. That's not true anymore. And I got a couple very, very dynamic kids that are very, very make one heck of a lot of money and very wealthy, but they do switch around about every 4 or 5 years. They move over here, so I don't know. I don't know exactly what I'm saying, but I guess what I'm saying is that I don't have a lot of faith in some of these government programs and things that we put in place, and I don't know how we ever regulate them to do a lot better job. But trust me, I'm glad that people all serve and try and better, and somewhere along the line hopefully I'll help somewhere, but I don't know where it'll be.
You'll be helping.
I hope.
Can I sum that up, Mr. Chairman?
Well, I was thinking of those intelligent kids of his.
Pardon, Mr. Chair.
I'll
just stop with that. So that hurt Thomas O'Neill.
He must think after his mother.
Well,
his mother.
I didn't say anything. I just talked.
No, but to summarize what he said, he's just as confused as all the rest of us.
No, wait, that's true.
Yeah.
That's all right. Goodbye. I think we're. When are we meeting again? Thursday? Wednesday. Is there a bill up? All right. Thank you very much. The meeting's adjourned. We'll see you guys Wednesday at 12:30.